So we will talk about the last lesson, which is lesson about the last two layers. But we started with ARP protocol, and this is also the first question in the summary. Address resolution protocol is used for learning about MAC addresses. So if the link layer needs to send data to particular station with given IP address, it must learn the MAC address, link layer address, so that it can be filled in the link layer header. So the station, if it doesn't know the conversion between IP and MAC address, sends a broadcast. Since it doesn't know the address of the target address of the station, target MAC address of the station, it must use the MAC broadcast, which are all ones. And it means that all stations in the network will receive this packet. And it means that anybody can answer. Of course, in normal situation, normal network, only the proper station answers. But if someone wants to fake the response, it can respond to our request. So this is the classical problem with old protocols, and it's even a little bit worse in the case of ARP, because there are so-called gratuitous ARP, which means that it's in fact an ARP response without a request. It's used for quite good aim. If we have two stations in the network that makes redundancies, each of them offer some service, and one of them is standby, so-called slave, the other is master. Only the master is running, and the slave is only checking whether the master is okay. And in the case that the master stops service, then the backup will start running. And because from this moment, all the stations must send their requests to the new computer from this pair. The new master, the server that becomes master, must inform all stations, all nodes in the network that the MAC address of the server changes. And this is done by this gratuitous ARP. So the new server sends an ARP message telling, okay, guys, now this address, this IP address corresponds to this, to my MAC address. And of course, this message can be sent also by an attacker. So it could be misused for this. So this is the safety risk of ARP. So this was the information about the layer that connects or service that connects the network and the data link layer. And then we talk about the data link layer. We told that data link layer has quite a lot of work to do. So it has in fact two sublayers called logical link control and media access control. So the LLC is the upper sublayer, and in fact, it's responsible for multiplexing. So storing the information about the network protocol used on the network layer, so that on the recipient station, the data could be passed to proper software at the network layer. So this is the task of LLC. And the lower sublayer, media access control, MAC, is responsible for controlling of excess of all the stations, all the nodes connected to the same media, so that they can work with this media properly. This is the difference between the two sublayers of data link layer. And then we told about the topology, because the topology of the network is very important when we talk about the media access control, the controlling of access of the stations to the network. We talked about two groups of topologies, point-to-point and multi-point topologies. And we told that it's important that we can look at the topology from the physical point of view, so how the wires are connected, and from the logical point of view, so how the station communicate each other. And in some cases, it could be that the physical and logical topology is the same, and in some cases is not, it's not true. And for instance, if we have a multipoint topology, either bus or star topology, we can use the same technology in connection which is topologically only point to point. So we take a cable and connect two stations, only one to one, these two stations, and then we make physical point to point topology, but logically it's still the same topology that the technology used needed. So if we use Ethernet, which use logically bus topology, then regardless of what physical topology, either point-to-point or multipoint or star topology we use, in all these cases, logically, the topology is still bus topology. So this is the difference between physical and logical topology. Then we told about collisions. If we have the multipoint topology with multiple access of stations to the same media, then all stations, when we talk about technologies that use bus topology, for instance, Ethernet, so there is logically a cable. It's either a really real cable or it's a bus inside a switch inside the concentrator. Then all stations at the same time can read from this media, which is okay, but any station can also write to the media. And could make a problem if two stations start sending at the same time. So how are the methods how this situation called collision is solved? So in the two most typical technologies we talk about, Ethernet and Wi-Fi, both use so-called CSMA, carrier sense with multiple access, which means that before sending data, every station must check whether on the carrier, on the media, there is some transmission. If there is some transmission, it must start waiting. If there is no transmission, the station can start transmitting, but there is race condition, but it's still could happen that two stations do the same check at the same time. In the time when the check starts, the media is free, but they start at the same time transmission, and then the collision still occurs. And then is a question how the collisions are solved. So Ethernet uses so-called collision detection, which means that when sending, the station must check whether on the cable there is the signal the station sent to the cable. If not, it means that there is a collision, And the station that detects this collision must tell somehow the other stations on the network that the collision occurred. In Ethernet, it's used by a special GEM signal. And the station must stop transmission and again start waiting. And the waiting is not for a defined time, because in this case, if all the stations use the same time for waiting, then the collision occurred the next time when they try once more to transmit the data, then the same collision with the same two stations would occur. So there is not a fixed time for waiting. There is a sub-range, and the station chooses randomly a time from this sub-range. And if this attempt again fails, then the station increases the range, typically doubles both bounds of the range, and chooses again a random time from this. And that's the reason why it's called exponential waiting. There is several attempts. In the Ethernet case, it's 15 attempts. And after these 15 attempts, the transmission is called failing if it's not successful. So this is the way how the collision is solved in Ethernet. And Wi-Fi uses a different approach to collisions. And this is that every transmission is acknowledged, because when one particular station is transmitting data to the access point, because the Wi-Fi is structured as a star topology. And in the middle of the star, there is so-called access point, and every station will communicate with this access point. So there is, in all cases, there is still communication between the access point and the station. So the communication could be simply acknowledged. So if the station tries to send a message and it doesn't get the acknowledge, it means that the collision occurs, that the access point was in the same time handling communication with different station, and this is the collision, and the station starts normally the exponential waiting. This is the solution of collisions, which is one of the questions in the summary. Then the next question is about virtual networks, VLANs. The VLANs is a method how to share the same physical network by more administrative domains. For instance, if we have a building and there are two or more companies in the same building, all of them will want to control, to manage their network separately. And so that we don't need to make a new arrangement and to lay new wires, we can do logical splitting, logical separation of the networks for the particular companies. The similar situation is if we have one company, but we have different groups that want to manage their network separately. For instance, here in this building, we have the same situation with all departments. The departments have their virtual networks. And then we can use this technology. How does the technology works? It works on the Ethernet version 2 format of the frame, where behind the MAC addresses, there are two bytes with type of the frame. And the virtual network works so that it splits the frame, and insert new 4 bytes inside into the frame. So in fact, the first 2 bytes of these 4 so-called VLAN tag, the first 2 bytes has a special value 8100, which is special type called VLAN type. And the rest of the 4 bytes, there are 4 bits of priority and 12 bits for VLAN identification. So we have 4,000 possible virtual networks in one network. And the crucial point of the method is that it could be done transparently. So if we have a switch which is capable to use these virtual networks, which are all switches currently, then we can configure particular port of the switch. I warned that we must be careful with using this word port because it's overloaded. We use it already on transparent layer as a number of an application, simply said. Now, at the data link layer, we talk about the port of a switch, which is one socket of the switch. So on the switch, we can define which ports on the switch belong to which virtual network. And it means that the station connected to this port sends normal frame with no idea about virtual networks, sends the frame, and the switch makes the splitting and inserting or injecting the VLAN tag. And when the frame has this VLAN tag, it can continue on the network, continue on the backbone of the network, and it's delivered only to particular ports that belong to the same virtual network. And when the frame comes to the final switch and it started to be sent out from the last switch to the end station, which is recipient of the frame, then the last switch again deletes the VLAN tag, shrinks back the frame, and the frame is delivered to the target station like if no virtual network is in the network. So the end stations have no idea about virtual networks or need not to have any idea. There are situations in which the station needs to know that there are some VLANs. For instance, if we have a router, common router for all virtual networks in the local network, so probably this router needs to be connected to all virtual networks. And then in this case, the port to which this router is connected is configured as so-called trunk port, which means that the switch doesn't do anything with the frame. The frame is sent to the end station, including the VLAN tag. And so the final station must find the VLAN ID and pass the content of the frame to particular software depending on the VLAN tag, VLAN ID. This is the method how share one physical network with more subjects. Then we told about the last part of the frame, which is frame check sequence. And we told that since in the data link layer, we are at the last moment before using a physical transmission, And then when the data is received on the target station, again, this is the first point when we check whether the physical transmission was correct and the data is transmitted without mistakes. And that's the aim of the frame check sequence. And the typical method how it's the frame check sequence done is CRC, a special hash function which is based on division of binary polynomial. And the idea is that we take the stream of bits and convert the stream of bits to the coefficients of a binary polynomial. And then we divide this polynomial with a special characteristic polynomial, which has the order of the same order as the number of bits we need to get. So for frame check sequence, which is 32 bits, we will use a polynomial with the order x to 32, and the remainder of this division must be a polynomial of order one less than the number, so 31 is the highest order. So we will get 32 coefficients, and these 32 coefficients are back converted to bits. And so we get the result of the hash function, which is interesting that this seems to be quite complicated, but it's not true. It's very easily implementable, even in hardware. We don't need any processor. It's possible to do by hardware. And which the second thing which is important is that despite this, the method is quite strong. So it can detect all errors with less incorrect bits than the size of the check. So all mistakes with less than 32 are detected, or all mistakes with odd number of bits. So it's very, very strong method. So, and then we moved to the physical layer. We talked about the way how the physical media is used for encoding bits. So it depends on the underlying medium. So if we use a metallic wire, metallic cable, then the electric signals are used for encoding the bits. And the method which is used is that there are two levels of the voltage on the wire. And the easiest way how to encode it should be that if there is a high voltage, then it's one, and if it's low, it's zero. But with this approach, we would have a problem that if the clocks on the recipient and sender side will be not synchronized perfectly, then we will get a mesh. And that's the reason that we must transmit also the clock tick. For instance, in Ethernet method, the so-called Manchester method is used, in which in every clock tick, the voltage changes from higher to lower level or vice versa. So the change means now it's the change of the time or clock tick. And if the change is from up to down, it means zero, and if the change is from zero from lower to higher, then the meaning is one. So this is method how metallic cables are used for encoding bits for transmission. Similar method is used for optical cable, where optical signals are sent and again detected on the recipient side. And we told about the two different types of cables, single mode and multi mode. The difference is quite important when we plan to make some optical fiber network, because the single mode cable has much narrower core, and for the light source, the laser is used. The signal sent on single mode can be more effectively encoded to light signals, and the laser is also able to send the signal to much longer distances. So the single mode is used for longer distances, and it's a little bit more expensive. The multimode instead has bigger the core, and it's not necessary to use laser as the as the source of light, and we can use simple LED diodes, but the bandwidth is lower, and also the length of the usable cabling is lower. So the multimode cables are used typically on the backbones, on buildings, on local networks, and single mode are used for longer distances. The difference between optical fiber and metallic cabling is that it has a higher bandwidth, the optical fiber, but it's quite more demanding installation, because we cannot bend the cable, the optical cable, as the metallic cable. This is the difference between the real cables, and if we use the wireless connectivity, then we use a basic signal, and the data, the binary data, is encoded to the signal by changing the signal somehow, by modulation of the signal. And we have three kinds of modulation: phase modulation, amplitude, and frequency modulation. Maybe you know the last two from radio, because AM, it's amplitude modulation, and FM is frequency modulation. So we know the terms from normally life, real life, and the same principle is used for Wi-Fi. The last thing we talk about is the method how bridge or switch, which is in fact subset of bridge. Bridge is more general term. Bridge is any device working on link layer, data link layer. It's like repeater and hub, which are also, repeater is any device working on the physical layer, and hub is concretely a kind of repeater working on structure cabling. So the difference between a repeater and a bridge is that repeater works at physical layer and bridge works at data link layer. So the repeater just copies the physical signal from one side to another side, or from one port to another port, and it doesn't know anything about addresses and doesn't solve anyhow collisions. And if we want to solve the collisions, we must move up to the data link layer, and then we have a bridge or switch, and this could solve the problem with collisions, because if we have a bridge with several ports, then particular traffic belonging to one port goes only to this port. How it's managed? The typical approach is so-called learning bridge. And we had a picture how the learning bridge works. The method is quite simple. The learning bridge looks at sender MAC address for every frame it has to forward, and it makes a table for each port, and there is an assignment of a node with particular MAC address to particular port. So when the switch works sometime, it knows already about location of all stations, which station belongs to which port. And then when a frame is coming which belongs to particular station, the packet is forwarded only to particular port. This is called learning bridge. And there is one problem with this learning bridge. If we want to use a redundancy and we want to place in the network more switches to connect different segments of the network to be more robust, then if we do not do any special arrangement, it can bring a problem. We demonstrated the problem on a simple situation that we have two segments connected with two switches. And the problem is that if a frame sent by a station, let's say A, comes to both switches, both of them will assign the MAC address of the station A to the particular ports, and both switches forward the packet to the lower segment. And because the switch doesn't change the frame at all, so there are still the same sender and recipient MAC addresses, so the forwarded packet comes to the opposite port, the lower port of all the switches, both switches in our case. So what happens? Both switches look at the sender address and looks, okay, probably the station moved from the upper segment to the lower segment, and they rewrite the assignment of station A so that now the station A belongs to the lower segment. And from this moment, the station A is inaccessible. What's worse, then the new packet that was forwarded and was received by the switch is again forwarded back to the upper segment. And so the packet, the frame will loop in the network forever. What's the problem? The problem is that if we imagine the network as a graph, mathematical graph, in which each segment is one node, and each route is each switch is one edge, then we have a loop, a cyclic graph, and we must find an acyclic subset of the graph, so-called spanning tree. The spanning tree means that we drop some edges from the graph. What means in our case, when edges are switches? So it means that these two switches, which one of them is redundant, they must talk each other, and one of them will be the master running, forwarding, and the other is slave at this moment, blocking, not forwarding, doing not anything but checking that the master is still working. And if there is a problem and the master stops the service, then the backup will start forwarding. And this method exists. Finding the spanning tree is known mathematical problem. There is an algorithm for doing that, and there is even a distributed version of the algorithm, spanning tree algorithm, STA, and there is a protocol that uses this spanning tree algorithm. The protocol is called spanning tree protocol, STP. And typically, if you buy a switch, the switch is capable to use this STP for preventing the loops. But it also means that if you connect a station to the switch, then the start of the operation is a little bit delayed, because the switch must first run the STP, which has some timeouts. And if you want to start the station quickly, you can typically configure a port on a switch as so-called fast start, or something, some term like this, which means I take responsibility. I'm telling you that I will never use this port for some potential loop, so please switch off the STP and connect to the station immediately. So this was the last question from the summary, and maybe I forgot to talk a while about the number of wires and the reason why we call the metallic cable twisted pair. I forgot to mention this, because it's very important that we call the metallic cable twisted pair, either unshielded or shielded twisted pair, so UTP or STP. Why we call it pair, twisted pair, if in the cable there are in fact 8 wires? The reason is that the pair of wires is the idea how the cable is protected against a noise. The reason is that if we use 2 wires which are twisted, then when the electric power goes through the wire, then it makes an electromagnetic field around it, and it both lower emission and reception of the radiation, so there is lower interference. And the other advantage is that if we have 2 cables, then the signal which is sent to these 2 cables is sent to both of them with negative sign. So on the recipient side, the device can read both signals, and by subtracting them, it can detect the difference made by the interference. So we can subtract, in fact, the interference. If the interference is in some reasonable level, like is in normal situation. If we have, of course, some very noisy situation, then we need to use the shielded twisted pair. Does VLAN has any disadvantages compared to normal LAN? Of course, the VLAN has a disadvantage. One disadvantage of using a VLAN is that every frame is 4 bytes longer. So it means that if we have a limit for the maximum of the Ethernet length of the Ethernet frame, which is 1,500, then if we inject the VLAN tag in it, it will be 4 bytes longer. So it's necessary that all devices on the backbone, all devices that can meet the VLAN tagged frame, must be able to work with frames longer than the maximum. But of course, if we have devices capable to use VLAN, they must be able to work with the VLAN tag. So it's not a big problem. And it's really very useful if you want to separate some traffic in local network. It need not to be different groups. It could be that on many local networks, it's quite common that for network management, we have a special VLAN because we want to use the same cabling for the network management information, and we don't want normal user to access the data sent by the network management. So this is one very typical example of using VLAN. So we need to have a dedicated router for the VLANs. Yes, of course. VLANs means that we have a separate virtual local network. Inside this virtual local network, we can structure with routers. It's not necessarily dedicated just one IP network. We can have a normal local network with routers inside one virtual LAN. And if we want to communicate between 2 different VLANs, we need a router because they are networks in sense of network layer. Not necessarily one network, but at least one network in the sense of network layer. So we need a router to communicate between them. And of course, we need a router to communicate from each of these VLANs to the outer world. And so that's why I told that a router is a typical example of a station that needs the trunk ports, that needs to have a logical port to every VLAN in the network so that it will be able to communicate between the VLANs. Okay, the next question on STP slide, it's that it can be used sometimes because it takes a few seconds to start. Yeah. In exactly which conditions the few seconds would matter? Well, we met this situation some years ago when the Windows station were very impatient. And if they were not able to start the network in few seconds, really few seconds, they simply switched the network off, and it was not very simple how to make them to rethink it again and reinstall the network.
And so it was the first case when we had to configure all the ports in our computer lab with the fast start so that the Windows station could be able to connect